So in this episode, we have Dan Hasler. He's a performance and leadership coach, and he's going to be talking to Sarah Shine, primary school vice principal at Alice Smith School, with responsibility for learning and innovation. Let's get into this episode right now. Welcome to Professional Learning, the podcast that's all about sparking courageous exploration. Each week, we'll be diving into a range of topics to prepare and embed our Book of Dreams work. We'll be exploring the skills and strategies in order to implement these ideas. Dan, it's good to talk to you today. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Really looking forward to the chat.
It's great to have you here. I've been really looking forward to this. Always good to hear about leadership and performance. And Sarah, great to have you here as well. How are you doing today?
It's all good. We've got very exciting times. Our staff have just voted for the dream of choice, which is going to be the next chapter of our playbook. So we're all very excited in Alice Smith at the moment.
Oh, much excitement going all around in that case. Sarah, tell us why you were keen on Dan being here on the podcast for this recording.
So Dan is an author, and his book, The Act of Leadership, has really inspired some of my thinking about just keeping leadership real. So when he agreed to join us on this podcast, we thought it'd be a great opportunity to just get some top tips on how we can be the best versions of ourselves as leaders. At our school, Dan, we consider all of us are leaders. Okay, so want to pick your brains. How does that sound?
It sounds good. Let's go.
So Dan, can you tell me a little bit about your background?
Yep. So born and bred in Manchester, qualified as a high school PE teacher there, taught there for a while in a really large inner city school. Then I moved to Australia because my girlfriend, who's now my wife, she's Australian. And she said, you know, have you ever thought about teaching PE in Australia? And I hadn't really, but I had watched Neighbours and Home and Away, and teaching PE in Summer Bay looked pretty cruisy. So we moved to Australia, and I got a job teaching PE there. Did about 10 years in a school in the eastern suburbs of Sydney before I got recognised by the New South Wales government for some work I was doing around well-being and depression and positive psychology and sort of and authentic engagement in schools. And as a result of that scholarship, I was given something of a platform really to present my ideas and write for different publications. And as a result of that, I started to get a lot of different inquiries and, you know, offers, for want of a better word, to sort of work on different kinds of projects. So I took a bit of a leap of faith and jumped into that world, and quickly that snowballed into all manner of different things, not just in education, but now I actually spend a fair bit of time working with professional sporting teams, elite athletes, the coaches, do a bit in the corporate world as well. We still do a lot in schools, but essentially we sort of try and find the good source, if you like, in and around performance, which I frame as being able to bring your best in the moments that matter, and leadership. How do we create the environments where people can bring their best in the moments that matter? So yeah, so it's a lot of fun. I get to work with lots of different people and able to share learnings from lots of different domains, which is pretty cool as well. So there's no boring days for me.
They're all going to be very different by the description of those things. I really like what you said there about being the best in the moment. I can't forget the exact words you used, but being the best versions of yourselves. We talk a lot about that. We're doing a lot of work on creating a culture of collective efficacy. Mm. And, you know, sometimes that might sound a bit jargony for people. What does it mean to you then?
For me, what it means is everyone's a high performer in hindsight. So everyone can look back on a lesson that went off the rails, or a conversation that they, you know, if they could have the time again, they'd far out, I wouldn't say that, or I'd say this, or I'd do something different. And lots of people are high performers in preparation. So they'll do the lesson plans, or they'll plan out how they're going to have that conversation. But when the pressure comes on, whatever that is, because it's different for everyone, it's about being able to access those resources in those moments. And so that doesn't just happen, you know, so that's why we then marry that with the leadership about the environments in which we can create. So you spend more time, or we create more time in learning zones. So then when it's time to perform, we can bring our best. So in the sports world, right, just a simple difference between school and sport. In sport, the vast majority of your time is spent training, and a very small proportion of your time is spent performing, you know, at the end of the, you know, on Saturday. Whereas in school, Most of your time is spent performing, in inverted commas, in front of the kids, in front of the parents, in front of your colleagues, and a very small proportion of time is spent training, you know, your professional learning meetings or whatever it might be. And so I'm not saying it's good or bad, I'm just saying that's the way it is. And so for us to be able to bring our best in the moments that matter, we need to really maximize not just the formal learning that we've got, but also the incidental learning. And then more importantly, and you mentioned this before, the culture in which that learning's taking place. And for me, not just for me, I think any any research on leadership would share this, but the way in which leaders set up those environments is, it's makes or breaks it.
Yeah. So I'm really curious. I know what we're trying to do. And actually, I read the chapter in your book about change leadership, and you talked about it not being done unto people, but being done with people. I know we've worked really hard on that. It was 18 months ago that Sian May, our head of school, led us in a workshop to really reimagine what we wanted education to look like. Now, that's a fantastic opportunity. I've been teaching 28 years and never have I worked for a head that has said, let's pause. Is this fit for purpose? Are we doing this right? What do our kids need? She often tries to get us to visualize the kids in 20 years' time and think, what will they need? And we all know their world is going to be very different. We know there's a changing landscape. So hopefully our staff feel like we've been on this journey over the last year. As I said to you earlier on, we've now just picked a dream yet to be announced. So I can't say anything, but to be announced that will be the next chapter of our playbook. So I really hope that our colleagues feel that we're making these decisions together. So that's one of the things that we are consciously trying to do as a whole school leadership team to get the environment right. But do you got any other tips on what anyone could do to help us get that environment right?
I think there's a cool little, I mean, there's loads of things, there's tips, there's loads of things that we could talk about. But I think one of the things which, two ideas maybe to pose. The first one would be, let's plan for all the inevitable stuff-ups, right? So if we're changing something, right, there is going to be, no matter how well we go about bringing people with us, there's still going to be some people who don't understand why. Why are we doing this? I don't understand the what we're doing. Crucially, we might not understand the why now. You know, so when we're talking about visions or the dreams or whatever it might be, it's one thing to know what it is. It's one thing to know why it is. But let me tell you, if I don't know why now, then neither of those two things are really going to carry. I need to have that sense of urgency. So I think getting on the front foot and just accepting there will be some people who don't connect the dots on that. So plan for how we're going to engage those people. How are we going to plan? Because people might think, yeah, it'd be great to do things differently until they realize, like, well, oh, actually it's pretty hard to do this now, you know, like I had it down pat last year. So how are we going to handle it, even though they might know the what, the why now, right? So they're on board, but now they're not quite sure how to do it, and that's actually going to make it harder for them to jump in because they know how important it is, so they don't want to stuff it up. And they get, you know, you might get a really interesting response there. So again, planning for that. And you know, one of the ways to plan for that is plan for the adults in the same way we plan for the kids. You know, like, we're all teachers. We're all used to people not being able to do stuff, and we scaffold it and we differentiate and we, you know, break it down and we spend one-on-one time and whatnot. And it's almost as though we think as soon as someone turns 18 and they're paid to do a job, that sort of gets left by the wayside. I'm not saying in your school's case, just to be super clear, but in a lot of environments, we see a lot of things which are really good practice for people, not just for kids, but for people, but we only seem to apply them to the under 18s.
I think it's a really good point. We talked about it in a previous episode, you know, as we handle the change, remembering to be kind to ourselves. And what I'm hearing you say there is, remember, what would we do for our students? Let's do it for each other as we go through this change together. Yeah. What was your next point, Dan? Sorry.
I think really, and the other thing is, like, there's this idea of, like, minimal viable products, which just comes from the corporate world, or minimum viable plan, which is something that I use with my team, which is saying, okay, where can we just get some traction, just make some, you know, some small things and just get moving. And because if we wait for it to be perfect, it's just not going to happen. So let's actually, you know, when people use that phrase, they go, now it's okay if it's not perfect, right? And it's kind of a bit, I don't know. It comes from a good place, and it is okay if it's not perfect. But let's just get rid of it's not perfect. Like it's okay. Let's just say, right, it's not going to be perfect, and we're planning for it not to be perfect, but we are planning to make a start. So the minimum viable plan is something that we're going to make a start on and come back to really quickly in kind of like a learning cycle. So rather than starting something and just hoping it works and getting a bit cranky if it doesn't, we're just going to start on a minimum plan, arbitrary date, but let's say 30 days down the track. We then come back and the question is, right, what have we learned here? Not did it work, not did it not work. I'm less interested in whether it worked or not. I'm interested in what we learn as a result of what we've done. And so what we're trying to do is just, again, you mentioned my book. So in the book, there's this concept of psychological safety, which is for me, it's not like I'm the only one to think about this. But it is an absolute integral concept in creating environments where we are accepting that it's not going to be perfect. And we are accepting that people are going to have questions, concerns, they're going to make mistakes, they're going to have ideas which run counter to ours. And we're going to nurture those.
Yeah, I think that's so important.
Yeah, the more we can nurture those in a real authentic way, then the more people are going to believe that it's okay to make mistakes, right? Everyone's told it's okay to make mistakes, but very few people actually believe it.
Do you know, that's one of my reflections actually of the last year, and with all the work we're doing to get to evolve the culture in the school is people find it really hard to trust that the whole school leadership team mean what they say. And I think we can message it as much as we want, but actually only through the actions and the collaborative actions will people genuinely start to see the authenticity of the gesture.
Just so you don't miss the opportunity you have, because a change initiative, it's like throwing a pebble in the water or a grenade, and all the mistakes, all the questions, all the concerns, all the ideas come up. Right. So the fact that you're doing this means you're going to have opportunity after opportunity to hold space for someone when they're admitting that they don't quite know what we're doing here, or far out, I've stuffed up, or you know what, I just don't agree with it. Okay, let's hold space there, because the leader's reaction in that moment will determine whether or not they'll believe you right down the track. Whereas if we're maintaining the status quo, if we're just going, okay, well, let's just keep this ship rolling because we're doing really well, let's keep the scores going, then it's not a ripe environment to create trust, if that makes sense. I know it sounds odd, but...
No, I 100% agree with you. I love that idea of holding the space and sitting with it. One of the dreams that we identified, so last year when we looked at five dreams of how we could reimagine education, one of the dreams that was shortlisted from the 20 to the five was the idea of learning, unlearning and relearning. And I can tell you in the poll now, it's not out of the mix for the final vote. So I think there's a genuine energy and interest in our school right now to sort of be willing to take those risks and have a go. But I hear you loud and clear that as a whole school leadership team, we need to hold the space and be true to the words. But also, like I said at the beginning, we're all leaders in our school. So I kind of implore all of us that are listening to this episode, we can all do this together, because actually moving from a hierarchical culture to this more collective, collaborative culture is big shifts for everyone. And there's still some default behaviors that people are thinking, oh, I've got to do that, or I've got to impress that person. And I can't say loud enough in to represent the voice of the whole school leadership team here now. Let's go forth. Let's remind me of your phrase there. What did you say? Steps.
Yeah. So what we're trying to encourage is people not to hold back waiting for it to be right, or waiting for it to be perfect, or waiting to know exactly what we're going to do. We actually want to encourage people just to step into it, small steps, those minimum viable plans, and just start walking in the right direction. We've not got it all mapped out yet, but we know we don't have a map, but we've got a compass. So if we can think about, just walking in the right direction, we'll figure out the map as we go, but we'll do it collectively. And if we think about creating an environment of psychological safety against this backdrop of change, you've got this beautiful opportunity to really, strengthen that culture of learning where people can share their insights without fear of it, you know, having to be a great idea. They can share their learning, they can share their mistakes, share their concerns, you know.
Yeah, that's spot on. That's absolutely the opportunity ahead of us, and it really does align with our purpose statement of sparking courageous explorations. Like you said, it might not be making sense to some people at the moment, but actually we do genuinely want this culture of learning for everyone. So really, 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 I love that. Minimum viable plans. There you go. Minimal viable plans, handwriting. There's just one more thing I wanted to pick out of your book, if possible. You talk about in your book, and I'm going to be using this, I'm going to adopt this phrase. I will try to acknowledge you when I use it in the future, but I love it. It's a bit about having less difficult conversations, start having adult ones instead. And I really love that. And actually, just to signpost people, it's the bit in your book about the tactical stuff, isn't it? So can we talk a bit more what your experiences of that are?
Yeah, sure. So very broadly speaking, you know, like when we talk to people about big challenges that they have in teams or in leadership, a lot of the time difficult conversations comes up. And I say, okay, sweet, tell me what's difficult. You know, why is it difficult to talk about this kind of stuff? And there's different things, but two quite common themes come through. The first one is I'm not quite sure what to say. And the second one is I don't want to risk the relationship. So what we try and do is we recognize that is a thing. But then we've got to also recognize that my best guess is that there was a time to talk about this when it was less difficult, right? So I'll give you a simple example. So it could be that there's someone who's just incessantly late to class or to their duty or whatever it might be, right? And now it's really difficult to bring it up because you know they've got a lot going on and you know there's this and you're good friends with them, but you just don't want to upset them, blah, 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 blah. But the first time they were late, that was the time to talk about it, right? But we missed it because we just hoped that would be the only time. And it wasn't the hill to die on, and it's not that big a deal, and it's week 8, and everyone's under the pump, and blah, 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 blah. So, three things there. One, we need to learn what to say. So in the book, there's some ways of structuring that, which kind of talk about, you know, how you can just mention something to put someone, how you can sort of move into a conversation, which I really veer away from framing conversations as difficult, because if I think I'm going to have a difficult conversation, and I'm thinking about it all over the weekend, my best guess is I'm going to have a very difficult conversation on Monday. But if I think, you know what, I need to have a really useful conversation here. I need to have a conversation where there's value in it for both of us. You know, I need to have a conversation which moves things forward, where we move forward together on this. So there's the framing piece, which, and if I frame it that way, I'm less likely to damage the relationship because it's going to change my inflections. It's going to change my intonation. It'll change my body language. It'll change all manner of things, all subconscious things. The last thing to consider is, why was it difficult to bring up the very first time? And the reason it was difficult to bring up the very first time is we'd never spoken about it as a collective to say, this is how we do business here. So it's hard to talk to, it's hard to pick up the person who's, you know, scrolling on their phone during staff meetings if we've never spoken about what it means to be present in a meeting. You know, it's really hard to pick someone up for being late if we've not actually spoken about what punctuality actually means in our team. Because I guarantee you, if you've got 5 people in front of you, they've all got a different definition of what punctuality is. Some people think, I've got to, you know, if the meeting starts at 10 o'clock, I've got to be there at 10 to 10. If I'm not early, I'm late. That's my definition of punctuality.
Oh, I'm the opposite. Yeah. I drive everyone mad. If I'm on time, it's a bonus.
But you wouldn't drive me mad if we'd spoken about it and we understood and we came to a collective agreement. So you would drive, that's a really good point. You would drive me mad if we hadn't spoken about it. And you know, depending on the nature of our relationship or whatever, you know, that your hierarchy or whatever, that's when it gets tricky, because I might then turn to Simon and go, oh, look at, here she is again, you know, rocking in, you know, this narrative comes about something that I'm just thinking about in my head. It's just, you know, I know why, like objectively, you know, like it's because you're busy, you've got this going on, you've got this going on, you've got this going on. But unfortunately, we defer to nonsense, right? It's like, oh, she can't be asked. It's this, it's that. And, you know,
yeah, so. But you're absolutely right, though, because those actions can very quickly undermine that kind of psychological safety in one respect, and also that learning culture, can't they? So those what I'm hearing there then, and in a more, I'm trying to think of a less formal way of saying it, because, you know, at the start of the year, you'd always encourage a team leader to think about protocols for your team and how you're going to operate, how you're going to function. But that just sounds like a little bit formal. You're right to get those relationships and have those conversations at the beginning. Think about them as being useful rather than brave or difficult. Useful. How can we help each other to keep this learning environment right?
And I think framing it that way, how are we going to work together? We spend so much time talking about the work and no time talking about how we're going to do the work. You know, so we sit down and talk about the meetings or the grades or the assessment tasks or the curriculum. We do loads of that. What we don't do is we don't talk about, well, what do we mean when we say the meeting starts at whatever time, or how are we going to show up? Like, what does it mean to be truly present? Is it okay for people to, and I've seen this in meetings, is it okay for people to hide behind the pillar so they don't have to engage in conversation? Is it okay for people to carry on with their own marking while someone else is presenting on something that they've obviously put a lot of time and effort in, but you know what? This marking's a bit too important to give my attention. Is that okay? And so it's not about being draconian about it. It's about saying, hey, we're in one of the most toughest, and I reckon it's one of the most challenging environments to work in the school, because there's so many different moving pieces. We need each other. You know, we need each other in order to bring our best in the moments that matter. And I need to know that you've got my back when I stuff up, and you've got to know that I've got yours when you stuff up. And so let's sit down at the start of the year, or sit down at the start of a term, or sit down whenever a new member of person comes into our team, and talk about how we get things done around here.
Yeah, I really like that. And we often, again, back to your point earlier about what do we do for the students, we often say to the kids, the way we do things here, the way we do things in our school is. So it's that enabling kind of language, isn't it? I'm really pushing my luck here now, but I've got one more question for you. Can we keep going?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. So what I wanted to just sort of mention was that, you know, we're very lucky in our school because we are reimagining and thinking about a new, brighter future, a different way to do things that's going to better serve the kids and us. And we're moving away from being data-driven to data-smart and all that. But it does leave me as a lady, an old lady that's been in the game a long, long time, 28 years, it leaves me thinking, right, how do we measure the impact of our leadership? So what's this happy medium ground? We know that the old ways aren't necessarily impactful. Got any top tips, any ideas on that one?
How do you measure anything that's truly important? You know, I think, let me flip it slightly, because I know I don't have an answer, but this is what I do. Whenever I'm working with a leader, I say this, I say, okay, think of the leader that's had the greatest impact on you. What did they do? But more importantly, how did they make you feel? And when we go around the room and we hear about that, it could be the professional leader. In many cases, it often is. Sometimes it's a family. Sometimes it's someone in the community, whatever, a sporting coach, whatever. But what we try and talk about is this idea about, you know, leader. Yes, of course, there are tangible outcomes, right? So, of course, we want to be able to see some return, for want of a better phrase, on these changes that we're making. We certainly don't want to see a decline in any of the measurements that either our community or anyone else holds to be important, right? I mean, that's more of a philosophical thing. Maybe, you know, you might have a different take on that. But essentially, there are things which are important and we need to make sure that we don't suffer in that regard. However, we must also recognize that sometimes we can achieve those outcomes and not be great leaders, right? So it's not always a simple equation. So really tapping into the qualitative side of things, which is hard to measure by definition, but, you know, thinking about, okay, how do we feel? I'd argue, like, there are certainly surveys you can do on measuring psychological safety, measuring your team's sense of belonging, measuring authentic engagement. That, for me, because if your leadership's rubbish, those three things are going to be through the floor. Interestingly, you might still be getting great results, right? And I think this is the dichotomy we have to be able to square. I've worked with lots of high-performing schools and other organizations where their metrics, for want of a better phrase, are quite good, right? There's no case for change there because we're producing what people are paying for, right? The case for change is more in the qualitative sense, which, you know, people are leaving and or people are unhappy and people are chronically stressed, or the attrition rate, or the, you know, I'm always interested in what the casual roster looks like, you know, how many people are having days off. And just to be clear, they probably got and I'm speaking very bluntly now, but there are probably a lot of schools in Australia in particular that could get away with that prior to COVID. But after COVID, everyone's kind of come back a little bit going, well, I'm not standing for that. You know, there's a teacher shortage now. I can go anywhere I want, right? So it's been brought into sharper focus, I think, in a lot of workplaces. Obviously, we're talking about education here. But, I think for me anyway, it's those qualitative, the relationship side of things, my sense of self-efficacy. Do I feel safer by virtue of you walking into the room, or do I feel safer by virtue of you walking out of the room?
Oh, that's very powerful. I'm really conscious of time, but I just want to say there that we've talked at the beginning about leadership, everyone in our community, all our educators being leaders. And of course, the whole school leadership team have a responsibility for the direction of the school and taking down those barriers and creating that environment. But I love what you've just said there in terms of all of us in our community. If all of us could be a bit more mindful, no critique, because I think we're a really kind, caring, fun community. But I actually think if we could all just be a little bit mindful of how we make people feel, or perhaps pause occasionally when somebody's left you and just consider how might that person feel as a result of that interaction. And I think if we all take that approach, that's only going to serve our community better, isn't it?
It's a concept called co-regulation, right? So we're all co-regulating each other's central nervous system, for want of a better way of putting it. So to think that anyone's doing it on their own, to think that my bad mood isn't going to rub off on you, to think that it's just a nonsense. So we're all in it together. And as you say, whether you're a leader, whether you're an educator, you know, you're in charge of a load of kids, parents, anyone, we've all got a part to play there. And this kind of comes down to this idea of self-leadership. How do I choose to show up here and contribute to an environment where people can be their best? I think that's kind of like a pertinent question that people could ask.
I think that is brilliant.
Dan, I'm really glad you brought that part up, because I think a lot of people, when they think about leadership, they think about people in positions of responsibility or authority, like CEOs in a business or senior leadership teams in a school or teachers in a classroom. But of course, ultimately, we're all leaders of our own lives. So, if we can all adopt some of these leadership skills that you're talking about here, then we'll all be leading to better lives. Like Sarah, I'm also keeping an eye on time here. Dan, it's been great hearing from you. But if anybody wanted to find you online, where's the best place they should go?
If they just Google me, Dan Hasler, danhasler.com is my website. That's basically got my links to my Instagram, the book, my own podcast and whatnot. So yeah, I'm pretty much, all over the internet, I think, in a good way.
And Hasler is spelled Haesler, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Dan, Haesler.com.
Fantastic. Well, we'll put links to that in the show notes as well. But Dan, it's been great hearing from you. Thank you so much for your time. It's been really good talking to you here on the podcast today.
A pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Dan. I really enjoyed connecting.
That's it for this episode. We hope you can take something from this podcast to support your implementation of the Book of Dreams. Please feel free to share it and contact us if you have any questions or ideas related to it. And don't forget to tune in next time for the next episode. We'll see you then. Bye for now.